please welcome in our new sponsor, Fishing Clash. Download Fishing Clash for free right now on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of your Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose the gift code section, and input my special code Taskmaster to get an awesome reward for a total value of $20. Enjoy chilling atmosphere after a hard-working day. Get familiar with different types of fish species and their habits. You can choose one or two, or you know what you like the most. Explore amazing fishing spots worldwide, from Florida to Kamchatka. Whether you prefer fly fishing, ice fishing, trolling, you'll admire the look of all the fishing spots available in this game. This game will help you remember how you went fishing with your dad when you were a kid. So download Fishing Clash today for free on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of the Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose gift code section, and input the special code Taskmaster to get a total value of $20. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fishing Clash, as it is a great casual time killer. If you've experienced a loss of motivation, energy, or sex drive, or if you're noticing that you're a little softer around the middle than you used to be, it could be your testosterone levels have dropped. By the time men reach the age of 30, in most cases, their T levels have started to decline, and low T can lead to a loss of muscle mass, depression, lack of energy, and a low sex drive. The good news is now you have your remedy with Test X9. This stuff is the real deal, guys. This formula has 9 clinically proven ingredients to naturally boost your body's own testosterone production. Experience increases in strength, energy, and sex drive, as well as improved mood and well-being. Feedback has been awesome. Guys in their 30s and 40s have reported waking up with the quote-unquote morning wood for the first time since they were teenagers. If you want to take it to the next level, you can maximize your results with the Ultimate Test Stack, which combines the Test X9 with the T-Assist, an estrogen control and liver support blend, and Recovery PM, an amazing sleep aid that has had incredible feedback for helping people to get the best sleep they've ever had without feeling groggy that next day. You'll be amazed with the effect of raising your T levels and improving your sleep will have on your overall performance and well-being. Don't settle for average. Man up at LegacySupps.com. That is LegacySupps.com. And use the promo code Sullivan for an additional 10% off your entire order. That's LegacySupps.com. And use that promo code Sullivan for 10% off your entire order for the best health and workout supplements out there. This is Pro Wrestler approved. The madness has officially begun, and it's time for you to shoot your shot and score big on the nonstop action with MyBookie. It doesn't matter whether you're filling out multiple brackets, betting the national championship winner, or simply looking for player and game props. MyBookie has you covered. Sign up today at MyBookie and use the promo code Taskmaster to secure a first deposit bonus up to $1,000. It's simple, folks. Put in $200 and play with $300. Just use the promo code Taskmaster and claim your bonus. College ball, NBA, and UFC, no matter the sport, no matter the minute, MyBookie puts the action in your hands with in-game live betting. And with the choice from thousands of lines and odds, you can turn any game day into payday. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Just don't forget to use that promo code Taskmaster. Remember, you can bet anything, you can bet anytime, you can bet anywhere with MyBookie.
back when Kevin Sullivan made a few little changes, he can host your own show like this. You get a lot of power. You get to go from the barn into the inside house. But Kevin, you left off with, you've now gone to West Virginia, broken into the business. How much time, where were you at this point? 6 months, a year, 3 months? Where was your career when you first came to West Virginia?
Probably 3 months.
Okay.
Probably 3 months. I came to West Virginia. Then I went to a territory in South Carolina. They had television. And it was owned by Ray Cowan.
I remember the name, yeah. What was the promotion there?
It was South Carolina Wrestling. That was Dutch Mantel's brother.
Is that right?
Yeah, Dutch and I were roommates.
See, I've known this guy for 35, 40 years, and it always amazes me how I still hear something I've never heard before. You know, because you think of all the thousands of miles we've done. So, did they contact you? Did you contact them?
They came up to West Virginia, and they liked me, and they brought me down. And then what happened, did you ever hear the name Johnny Heidelman? He was an old-time shooter. He looked exactly like Taz. I mean, exactly.
Really? Yeah.
And
Heidelman?
Yeah, Heidelman, an old German. And he was a fabulous swimmer, but he was built exactly like Taz.
Yeah. Taz sings, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. But he came in, and we started a draw room. That was in Crockett's territory.
Yeah. Oh, so this is under is this under Crockett's wing, or is it separate?
No, separate. We're in Crockett's territory, and he's got TV, so that didn't appease them too much.
Right.
So Dutch and I, they had some guys from that had worked for Crockett, some guys that had been enhancement guys in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
But they're giving Dutch and I a little push for wrestling one another. And John Heidelman came over. They were all excited because he had supposedly quit, got fired by Crockett. Well, we get there, and he kind of cozies up to me in Dutch, and he tells me that he was there to break our arms or legs. Nice way to start the conversation.
Wow.
And he said, but I told him you guys might be able to do something. I think they sent Dutch to Florida, but they sent me to Georgia. Georgia Checkers from Russell.
And who was running that at that time? Was it Ole then?
No, it was Paul Jones.
Okay. Yeah.
The original Paul Jones, not Paul Jones, but we know. And Buddy Fuller, Ray Gunkel, and Leo Garibaldi was the booker. That's a name you don't hear of very often. No. Roddy Piper and I knew Leo pretty well. Roddy thought Leo was the smartest booker he ever saw by far.
Yeah.
Wow. I heard a lot of stuff about him too. Yeah. He was a brilliant guy. So I stayed there from, I think it was June or July till Christmas. And I went home for Christmas. Then I started in the Gulf Coast area for the fields. I lived in Pensacola, had a wonderful time. And then I was thinking,
roughly how much time in each of these territories?
Okay, I was in Atlanta for, like I said, 4 months. Then I stayed 9 months in the Gulf Coast. Then I went to Nashville, stayed 13 months. And I went down to Florida, say, 2 years the first time.
So by the time you had gotten to Florida, you had a good solid two and a half years under your belt?
I had 2 years under my belt. Yeah, 2.5, yeah.
Now, at that point, because Steve Austin and I talked about this when I did his podcast. We spoke for about 2 hours just catching up, so we hadn't spoken for so long. And he asked me this question. He said, do you mind if I ask it on the air? How long, he asked me, did it take before I started feeling comfortable in the ring? Not mastered it, or even close, but if something went wrong, my hair wouldn't catch on fire. And I thought, well, sort of going through my head and thinking, okay, probably about 5, 6, 7 years, like in that range somewhere. At this 2 years in, you're going to Eddie Graham, you're going to Florida.
Yeah. I was very lucky to answer your question, but I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, did you feel that you was in good control of your craft, or were you still very cognizant of what you didn't know?
I was very cognizant of what I didn't know, but I was very, very lucky. When I went to Atlanta, Bobby Shane took a liking to me, and he was a brilliant, brilliant guy. You know, would have been one of the best horses of all time.
He died young, right?
In a plane crash.
Yeah.
So he took a liking to me. Then,
also a phenomenal shooter, right? An amateur.
Yeah.
Shane.
Yeah. And so he came to me and said, I'm going to book you in Gulf Coast because I'm going in there and I'm going to work against you. But when I went to the Gulf Coast, they put me with Ken Lucas. You ever hear the name?
Yeah, sure.
Train Punky Morton.
Yeah.
One of the greatest baby faces of all time. Jack Briscoe puts him in the top five.
No kidding.
And they put me with him. So he babysat me for 9 months.
Good work.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
And then he sent me to, I left, and Kenny got me booked in Nashville, and they put me with Len Rossi, the established star there.
Wow.
And he was in his 40s, and I was, you know, just 21.
Yeah.
So I went with him, and there was another guy that babysat me. So then when I got to Florida, I was supposed to go be Robert Fuller's partner, but they put me with Mike Graham, and I was babysitting Mike at that time. So it was one of those things. They threw me into the fire, and I was around two of the greatest baby faces. Ken Lucas made one of the greatest comebacks of all, like Punky does.
You're right.
And Kenny
sure
could sell it. Punky, you know, I look at Punky work and I'm still watching Kenny work.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's how, then from then on, it just, you know, got on.
Yeah. Just a side note for the fans here, something you just said reinforced what we'd spoken about a bit ago about how, you know, learning from these guys, you're going to take on some of their traits.
Yeah.
And take on their traits.
Yeah.
Because of the way they teach and how this business is. I've heard so many legendary stories about Eddie Graham. Never had the pleasure of working for him. I don't believe I ever met him. But I hear all these stories, and I can put myself in that stunt those kids place from all those years ago. That was the kind of guy I would love to work for. Somebody who was telling me, go left, go right, stop going in the center, specific direction. And I hear things like that about him. In your take, somebody worked closely with him and under him. What was his magic ingredient?
Timing. No. Timing. He just knew exact timing. And it was, give me an example. I don't care if it was me booking Florida, Dusty booking Florida, Lou Tillett, Holly Race, Dory Funk, Dutch Mantel. Tuesday nights, Eddie booked Tampa. He gave the finishes. You might have booked the guy, but it was his finish. So one night I was wrestling Bobby Shane, me and Michael wrestling Bobby Shane and Gorgeous George Jr. And Eddie laid out the finish. And the finish, I'm not going to get it, because 40 years ago, I'm not going to get it correct, but it was something where I had a double knockout. I went to the apron, Bobby went down. He got up, grabbed my hand from the outside, wanted to run it into the metal post.
With you on the apron.
Yeah, I put my foot up. I took Bobby's head, rammed it in. Turnbuckle, three times. I got on the top, dove. Bobby caught me, rolled through. Small package. No, rolled through, covered me. One, two, I kick out. Small package, I kick out at one. Bobby gives me a tackle, I go backwards. Hits the ropes, gives me a tackle, a low tackle. I go through the ropes backwards. Bobby backs up, goes to give me a tackle. I sunset flip him. One, two, he kicks out. He goes to shoot me in the turnbuckle. I reverse it, shoot him into the babyface turnbuckle. I mean, I shoot him in the babyface turnbuckle, give him monkey flip, tag Mike. Mike hits him with two head scissors, tags me. I'm supposed to hit him with three drop kicks and cover. So after I blew it up, after the second drop kick, I covered him, 1, 2, 3. I get upstairs, so I said, hey, Ed, what did you think? Good finish, huh? He said, where's the third drop kick? Guys used to be, you know, the guys in the dressing room, everybody's bullshit.
Yeah.
On Tuesday nights, you go up to a guy, he said, no, don't talk to me. They'd be going over the finish.
Yeah.
Up and down the halls, it was like the night of the living dead.
Right.
Oh, I mean, he just had it. I mean, he knew. And he knew how to draw money. One of the greatest matches I've ever seen in my life, Billy Robinson, Tony Charles. They did all the English white slots. It was fabulous. On third, me and Eddie were leaning over the balcony and watching it. I said, great match, huh? He said, yeah, too bad it won't draw any money.
I got to ask you just a little side note, a little side question in here. You remembered a finish from 40 plus years ago. What'd you have for lunch yesterday?
I can't even remember. I can't remember having brushed my teeth.
So, were you there in Florida when Dominic came before? I'd never known that before he died.
No, I left and Dominic came in. He had a great run there.
That's what I heard. That's what he said about. Yeah. And Dominic was not the kind of guy to put himself over.
No.
But he talked about Australia and Florida being the two, and San Francisco being the three places where he was, upper card.
In Montreal.
Yes, in Montreal, yeah, that's over where we first started. Now, you said the name, the masked Frenchman.
Frechette,
yes. Dominic talked often about a Frenchman who had trained him. But he could not remember his name. Was it Frechette?
No, it was Pat Girard that trained. Pat Girard, who trained all the guys.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, anybody that came from overseas kind of migrated to Pat.
Okay,
yeah.
Makes sense. Were you aware at this stage, again, now you're butting around these smaller territories and then finally to Florida, were you aware of this world out there? Portland, Memphis, San Francisco, and so you work. Because we get cheated, not cheated, we get to cheat by using the internet, right? We get a lot more information than we would have before. Back in those days, it would have been either talking to somebody from there, reading about it in a magazine or whatever. So how were you aware at that stage in your career?
I'll tell you, it was interesting. When I kind of caught on, like when I got to Florida, a guy would come in, I was a babyface, so I'd be a heel. And he'd go out and work, and you know what territory he just left.
Really?
It was a different style.
Yeah.
And New York was the slow man style.
Right.
And Georgia, it was holds. And then the heels got a lot of heat. In San Francisco, the guys that came from Cisco were doing high spots, big high spots.
Ray Stevens.
Pat Patterson.
Right.
So you got to know guys that came from different territories. In fact, I was one time when I was in Nashville, I thought about going to Portland, and I had talked to Don Owens, and he wanted me to come there, and I was going to go, but then I got the call to come to Florida. So, I want to go all the way across country. I just dropped out from the States.
When you were in your initial run in Florida Championship Wrestling with Eddie, later you start booking in places. Had you started that in that first run? Was Eddie coming to you and letting you sit under the learning tree?
Oh, did he let me sit under the learning tree? Yeah, because Mike and I were very close, and then him and his dad, Eddie, had a falling out, and I knew what it was about, but I wasn't going to tell Mike.
Right.
And so Eddie would come to me and say, or he called me and say, come to the office at 1 o'clock and we'll go fishing. I want to talk to you. And I'd say, Eddie, I got to leave at 4 to go to Jacksonville. Don't worry, I'll fly up. Caused a little heat between me and Mike, right?
Yeah.
So he would be out there, and I'd ask him questions. And one time, where he looked at me like maybe the light bulb comes on off from this idiot, he asked me. They had a best of end of the year.
Yep.
And he said, "What did you think?" He said, "I haven't seen the best of yet." He said, "What did you think of the matches?" I said, oh, they're great. I guess the referee gets bumped on every match, huh? He went, what?
Yeah, you picked that up.
Louis Tillette was gone. I mean, so he kind of, after that, told me, hey, this is what to do. He didn't open the door, just gave it a crack so that I could see a little light. And then I was around a lot of smart guys, like mentioned Leo Garibaldi, Bobby Shane, just Kenny Lucas was smart. I mean, Len Rossi. So, you know, like you said, we learned from the old timers and we kept our mouths shut, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And we were in the car so long, we kind of got it drilled in our head, you know, like you know,
sure.
You'd be a teacher.
Yeah.
You know, this is A.
Rote memory, yeah.
What is it? A. Okay. What is it? I'm not sure. It's fucking A, you idiot. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, with those territories, one of the things I always like to talk about and ask guys like you is, so in Florida, you guys aren't running L.A., Boston, Pittsburgh, right? You're Florida, so you're pretty much home every night.
Yeah.
And making good money.
Yeah.
So those territories, you may not make, you know, what you would have made in WWE, but you could make a damn good living and not spend it all on the road.
Right.
And so was the Florida Loop, were those towns weekly towns or were they monthly?
Orlando was Sunday, West Palm was Monday, Tampa was Tuesday, Miami was Wednesday, Thursday was Jacksonville, Friday was either Fort Lauderdale or Tallahassee, they had two towns.
Right.
And Saturday was once a month St. Pete, once a month Lakeland, once a month Sarasota, and once a month Daytona.
Wow. And just keep going over and over.
Just going over and over.
Do you think in today's world, you know, we always talk about this and then, now and then. Would it be possible to run successfully any town weekly?
You know, I think if you did, you'd have to spend a lot of time but we're also creatures of habit.
Hmm.
And if you're in a situation where there's not much entertainment, you got to remember, Shane, when I went to Florida, the only professional sport team there was the Miami Dolphins, so they had just appeared.
Wow, yeah.
So there's three football teams,
mm-hmm.
two hockey teams,
yeah.
Two basketball teams.
Right.
So there's a lot more of an
entertainment. Sure.
When we were there, we were it, you know what I mean?
Right.
So.
And back then, you know, I've read about them in magazines coming up. You know, wrestling played off of culture, right?
Absolutely,
so
yeah.
We had the evil Russians when the Cold War was on.
Yeah.
You know, Otto for the Germans and the Rashki and all that. Obviously, today a different world. We talk about this all the time, privately and publicly. How the world has changed. You mentioned the show earlier, All in the Family, which, by the way, for you folks out there that aren't familiar with the show, you lived under a rock for the last 50 years. Shows like All in the Family, Good Times, Jeffersons,
yeah.
Those were shows that were hilarious, well-written shows, incredibly acted. But those types of shows are what started turning the tide,
right,
of getting away from all the bigotry and everything else. They did it in a tongue-in-cheek way.
Right.
Wrestling today, from my point of view, it's starting to follow the trends rather than set the trends. So, you know,
that's a good analogy. Yeah.
You know, all of these things that we're seeing in the business today, you know, would have never been done back in the day. And you wonder, like, I think we both know, there'd be no chance in hell that any network would air you if you went out with a stereotype hell, in West Virginia, when ECW was offered free airing over the entire state, they only asked that we had asked us to remove two clips on the opening of the show. There were Beulah getting bumped and I think Franny getting bumped. They wouldn't have it because they didn't want spousal abuse, and Paul refused.
That was brilliant, huh?
Yeah, right. But our business, built off of those things, and they always worked. Now suddenly we're in this politically incorrect era where you can't say any of those things, and it's not only affecting wrestling, I think it's affecting the culture, right? Comedians can't go out and
right.
be as risque as they want to be and push the envelope. where did you first start seeing that you were cognizant of what was going on? Here's an Arab wrestler, so we're going to make him a terrorist. That kind of thing.
Well, the Russians and the Germans, when I first got in, were always there, the Japanese too. Hmm. But I often wonder, and I guess I'm scooting around this answer because I'm not really sure. It was like all of a sudden I woke up and there it was, right? Hmm. But what I think about sometimes is if we get to be this cognitive about upsetting people,
right,
if someday we get the franchise down and me, Hack, and Gary the Bulldog and Sabu come down and we cane you and kick you, is that promoting gang violence?
Yeah, right. I mean, you can splice any of this.
Yeah.
Down to its basal level.
Yeah. So does that happen?
Well, for that matter, if you have kids' books, right? The knight slays the dragon or, you know, does the giant, isn't that, you know, it's an endangered species, right? I mean, it's, again, we can go through this over and over again. It's always going to come back to the same place. It's insanity, right? And we can either agree to go along with it, wink, wink, even though we don't believe it, and pretend that wall's not white. It is. And so at that point, like with wrestling, I would imagine if you took somebody like a Jim Barnett or an Eddie Graham, Vince McMahon Sr., and popped them in and said, okay, book the show tonight. Right? They'd get some serious heat.
Oh, yeah.
Just based off their norms.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it best. Their norms were completely, completely different than ours. And to do what they did, even when I was a kid, I won't even mention the angle, but I saw this angle.
Yeah.
It dealt with Tar.
Ooh, okay, say no more, yeah. Wow.
Said, what are they doing?
Yeah.
What are they doing? And I thought, Jesus, this isn't right. And how they didn't, but they didn't get even, someone say, oh, you can't. No one has said you can't do that. So
right.
As we get further and further down the line, I am surprised. You know how you mentioned UFC earlier about, and if you remember, McCain was the guy that was behind that stop.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that some politician doesn't jump on the bandwagon when somebody's going to get hurt in UFC. We know.
Oh, sure.
It's just a matter of time. And Dana White reminds me of Vince's, I take care of my guys. You know, the concussions, it's not that you don't know what you're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen some documentaries on the guys with concussions.
Yeah.
Is some politician going to jump on that and say,
eventually, yes.
Yeah, we gotta stop this fighting.
Right. And what needs to be said there is, at least from my perusal, is if Troy Martin wants to be a boxer. Again, it's no secret he's going to get hit.
Right.
I mean, he knows that's part of the game. At what point do you draw the line between me as an adult making decisions for me and Big Brother over here deciding, oh, you can't do that. We're keeping you safe, Kevin.
Yeah.
Guys like us would never have the option of getting into wrestling.
Right.
Had they turned their attention to that way, if this existed back then, you and I would have been deprived of careers. These fans would have been deprived of some incredible matches over the years. And I think the thing about wrestling that always stuck out to me, much like in the old movies, the heel wasn't allowed to get away with it.
Right.
He couldn't ride off into the sunset happily ever after.
Right.
And somewhere that was dropped. The same thing in wrestling. I think by and large, we go out there, at least from where we come from in the business, we tell morality tale.
Right? Yeah.
Here's this big mouth jerk off franchise, and he's ended up paying for being a big mouth. Right, it can't just be constantly is the king of the ball. Again, we're just sort of shooting around here, but I want to get back to your career. So now you get in. Were you aware at this point, we're what, talking 3-4 years into the business?
Yeah.
Obviously, I doubt that you were getting rich at that point, although you might have been making decent money.
I was making a good living. I mean, now that I look back, you're going to realize in Florida they were having gas wars, 19 cents a gallon.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
But I mean, not where you could have wrestled for a couple of years.
No. But, you know, you're making a good living.
Yeah. And
I remember in 1974, Jim Barnett came to back from Australia, bought part of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
He said, gentlemen, no wrestler is going to make under $700 a week.
Wow.
He said, truck drivers are making $500. You guys are much more important than truck drivers for him.
Right, for the
picture. For himself, yeah.
So, what point did you feel in your career that you have an affinity for this? Like, you can see, because you're one of the minds that I think in wrestling that can look at a rock and say, hey, we've got an angle there. Let's do this and that to it. We've got a good angle. Where did that start coming in? Because for me as a kid in the business, I was always so focused on my match.
Yeah.
Anything outside of that, I didn't have time for.
I've told this story a few times. Okay, so now I get up to Vince's singles.
And he happened, what year is this?
76.
Okay.
He happened to like me because I was a local, but I didn't start there. I was five or six years on the road. So, and he kept me in a good spot. I mean, I was the guy that got the guy wrestled to wrestle Bruno.
Mm-hmm.
I was Calhoun's partner. I was the Giant's partner. I beat the guys on the way out, like Spurs. So he kept me in good shape. And I'm saying to myself, I'm watching the shows, especially the big shows, right, that he booked completely. And I'm thinking, this is like 80s booking, you know what I'm saying? And Eddie was the guy behind it for him when he first took over in the 60s, in the late 50s. And so I'm watching this and saying, there's a connection here, but I don't know how this guy's doing because he's a huge talent. One guy got three matches against Bruno. One guy got two. One guy only got one.
Right.
How does he know?
What decides that?
Yeah. So you know where the original Rocky was filmed in the that in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's where we used to do TV.
Is that right?
Yeah. So you get to TV, and when you walked into the dressing room, I saw the original Rocky the other day, and he's go by the toilets there. That's where we used to go to the bathroom, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there was a long table, about as long as the counter, mm-hmm. right? And Vince would sit in the middle, and all the cronies sat around him. Gorilla, Lou Albano, Arnold Skolin, Ernie Roth, Angelo Savoli, and a couple of others.
Yeah.
So Vince's book would be open, and he'd be having his bifocals on, and he'd be writing shit. So one day I got there early. I took the train from Boston. Because you could either live in Boston or New Jersey. So I was living in Boston because he was using me on the wiggle head.
Yeah.
So I took the train, take a subway over to Philly, came out of there. I walk in, Vince is, and the cronies are there. It's 2 hours before anybody's get there because I took the train.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, how are you doing now? Well, put my bag down and sit there. All of a sudden, I think it was Lou said, Vince, I'm stopping, let's go eat, let's go to that Italian restaurant. So they all get up and left. So I'm sitting there looking at the table. They're gone, they can't be back yet. So I get up and I open this book up.
Yeah.
And this is about June, and I start at the original part of the year.
Yeah.
And I look at the matches he had, then I look at June, then I look at he's got it all booked to the end of the year. In all the major towns,
yeah.
Bruno won two or three matches.
Yeah.
The tag match was the big deal.
Yeah.
Then the heel that was getting hot was on the third from the top.
Yeah.
Then he'd have a couple of local guys. If he had Andre Haystacks, he had them in there. And then on the second or third match, you have a heel that he's bringing in.
Yeah.
And just getting squashes. I mean, the guy was squashing like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, how the hell is he doing this? So All of a sudden, I'm looking at these. And they walk in. He looks at me, you know, all his bifocals. And the rest of them, they wanted to burn the Frankenstein monster down. So he comes over and says, like what you see? I said, yeah. He said, do you get it? I said, not a clue. He said, you want to learn? I said, yeah. He said, sit down. So I said, how do you do it? He said, I don't follow the pattern.
Right.
He said, but I know what the guy's capable. He said, you know, I talked to Eddie. And I said, the one that sticks out to me is, you're flying a guy in for the guy that's in another territory. He's on the second or third match, 30-second squash. Yeah. Explain that one to me.
Yeah. And what did he say?
He said, because you know the guy that's on the third match from the top that I'm getting ready for Bruno? What if he gets hurt or flakes off? I could just shoot that guy right there.
Wow.
And he said, maybe even stronger than the guy in the third match.
Yeah, I haven't been squashed earlier.
Yeah, he'd been having squashes for months.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, wow, I would never have thought that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I said, he had told me one time, he said, usually I can pick him out, but I had a couple of bad releases. I said, he had Bull Ramos. You ever hear the name?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Bull Ramos.
Bull went in there. He didn't take a bump until he wrestled Bruno. Guys would drop kick him, he'd stagger. He'd hit the ropes and bounce back, but he never took a bump. But I don't think, he didn't say it, but I don't think he was crazy about Bull's work. Or might have been Homer Odell, who's his manager. Homer was a bit of a loose cannon. He said, I only booked him for one match against Bruno all around the loop. He said, I turned people away in every venue. He said, so you make mistakes sometimes, but you learn from your mistakes. He said, you have them take a bump earlier.
Yeah, right. Did any ever, because I know it must have happened, was there somebody who had, you go to the building tonight in Lakeland, Florida, and you got a buddy with you. You get in the ring beforehand, you're going around. Did any ever come out and go, hey, who's the other guy with Kevin?
Yeah.
So he was open-minded.
Yeah,
that wasn't just his crew.
He was open-minded, big time open-minded, yeah. And the other thing about Eddie is, I was in St. Louis a couple of times. For some reason, I lucked out. Some reason, Pat O'Connell loved me.
Is that right?
Yeah, because when I first, me and Kenny Lucas went into Kansas City, and first time I met Pat, he grabbed me. You know, he's an old-time champion, right?
Yeah.
He grabbed me, pushed me around. So I said, oh, boy. So Pat used to hide the whiskey in different places all around the building. So I waited about the third match when it was four sheets in the wind. I ran up behind him, picked him up, waist locked him, jumped him. I said, world champion, my ass. And I laughed like a son of a bitch. So he booked me with him in St. Louis.
Yeah.
As his partner. And one time I remember they were having a, I think it was Flair. I don't know. I think, it was Terry and Harley. And he said, you got Eddie's number in your head? I said, yeah. He said, do me a favor. He said, I don't have my book. Call Eddie, I gotta get a finish.
Wow.
Call him Eddie at home to get a finish for St. Louis.
Right, wow. Well respected though.
Yeah, and Vince and Eddie used to talk every day.
Mm. Was the, again, that was before my time, at least as me being in business, was Florida Championship Wrestling, was that officially part of the NWA?
Yeah.
Okay,
Eddie was president twice.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because, again, for the fans out there that may not understand, you hear this old school, new school territory words thrown around. So the NWA, like you said, had been around forever, but it was a loose confederacy. Might run San Francisco, I might run St. Louis, and all those people bring them all together.
Right.
And the champion, correct me if I'm wrong, whoever was the NWA champion had so many obligations to go make appearances at those.
Exactly. And they met once a year. They had a championship committee. They voted on the world heavyweight champion, the junior heavyweight champion, and they also voted on loosely for the light heavyweight champion because Saldo Luderoff, the Mexican promoter,
right.
They used that as the big championship down there.
Mm.
So they would vote on that. And then they would say, we got a
we got to start looking around for a replacement for Jack or Terry. You got to fill this. Well, they get down a list of five guys. They say, okay, let's see what happens this year.
When they would make a replacement like that, they say they knew one of the Briscoes or the Briscoe not leaving. Did they go out and say, we need a tag team? Or did they go out and say, we need a tag team that's technical, like the Briscoes, right? Were they looking for similar like that?
Sometimes they would, and sometimes they would go the opposite direction.
Bushwhackers.
The Sheepers.
Sheepers.
They would go the opposite direction.
So a totally different flavor.
Yeah.
And both work.
Yeah.
Right? If you get the right team in the Briscoes vein, it's going to work, but these guys are going to work on the flip side.
And they would do that to break the pattern.
Yeah, like you said earlier, the patterns, right? Because again, that's it. I don't feel like, I love talking to our audience here. Every human being, you, me, everybody watching out there, we get up in the morning and we pretty much
have the same pattern. It's brush our teeth first and blow our nose, right?
Yeah, it's a rat maze, right? We do the same thing on the hamster wheel every day and probably drive the same roads to and where we're going to or from.
And the other thing about pattern, they would tell me was, okay, if I replace, technically, like you said, we'll say the Briscoes. If he replaces the Briscoes with technical wrestlers, they're not going to stand up to the Briscoes, and they'll be weakened. But if I bring the Sheep Herders in, and then the technical wrestlers come in and beat the Sheep Herders, the Briscoes will be a distant memory.
Right, yeah. See, this is the kind of stuff about booking when you hear this stuff, right? And you hear it in first person and saw it, sadly, that learning tree of Eddie Graham, and going out and doing it, it's, in writing specific, there are 8 universal themes. Every book, every movie you've ever seen fall into one of those categories. And in wrestling, Bill watches today, again, just voice out Bill's thinking. He used to say, at Thanksgiving, you don't want just a big pile of turkey. You want a little bit of everything. And I got the analogy immediately. So if you're going to do that, to somebody young in the dressing room, just coming in, then, now, a million years ago, that is so simplistic, and it's background philosophy and thinking. But take 100 bookers, promoters, maybe one of them will find out, right? And go that route, and that by itself makes it stand out.
Right.
It's just incredible, like, when you go back and hear, because again, we've worked for how many promoters and how many different bookers. And some of them are similar and alike, but for the most part, all their own being. And Paul Heyman marched to his own drum. Right? I mean, totally got him on some level, and other levels didn't have a clue who he was. And I'm sure Eddie was probably the same. Yeah. I know Bill was that same way. Dusty Rhodes. Let's talk about Dusty for a second, because I heard you talking to him on the podcast earlier. Obviously one of those, and I had mentioned earlier in this interview with the you and I were sitting here interviewing Dusty, walk in the back room here. We don't see him or hear him. We just know there's somebody there, right?
Yeah.
That aura precedes them. How much of that, first of all, how much of Dusty's booking did he pick up from Eddie? Was it all of it? Or?
A lot.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have different influences, but obviously a lot of it.
I'd say him picked it up from Eddie, and believe it or not, Dusty picked a lot up from Mark Lewin.
Is that right? And you hear these names kicked around, and I've met Mark, and you hear this, and Dominic would talk about Mark.
Yeah.
Because of Kalua, King Iaka.
Yeah.
From
Hawaii.
Hawaii. And he was there. He was one of the big stars in there when Dominic came in. And, Dominic, so we're talking, 50, 60 some years ago, but he remembers Mark being there, and it was a good hand, and the stuff that he was doing. Going all over the place here, but I'm going to try to stick with Dusty for a second. He was obviously larger than life, had the charisma, and booked some of the most iconic stuff during certainly my career, worldwide, and I'm sure you saw several things like that. What were the key points that Dusty picked up from Eddie and you, and what things were Dusty's? Because we throw it all together and say, we learned from Eddie Graham, but what things did he do differently?
Dusty knew how to produce a huge spectacular. Mm. the bash of the beach. Mm. That was all Dusty's. Not bash of the beach, the bash.
Right.
Starcade.
Right.
Dusty just knew how
to... Jim Crockett Memorial Cup.
Bunkhouse Stampede. He just knew how to produce huge events. But he took Eddie's philosophy for his matches, you know. Mm. And if you look at it, Dusty, wherever territory he's in, he got his heels as hard as he could.
Yeah.
That was Eddie's philosophy.
Yeah, yeah.
He had young baby faces supporting him.
Yeah.
Young, good-looking baby faces supporting Magnum and the Rock and
sure.
Roll.
Yeah.
He had great tag teams that could work. Midnight Express, the Fantastics. Fabulous ones. I mean, he... And then on the flip side, the Road Warriors' heels and the Four Horsemen. He knew how to position his guys. Mm. And he did it like Eddie did it, almost like a football team. Mm. Okay, this guy's my quarterback. The franchise's my quarterback. But he needs a great left tackle because he doesn't get blinds.
Right.
I'm going to put Iron in that spot.
Mm.
Yeah. But he needs a burly center. I'll put Walker in that spot. Just knew how to place guys.
Because it really is not by no means oversimplified, because there are ways, like counter to what Bill Watts used to say, it does look like quantum physics to me. And the way, why are you pushing this guy, not that guy?
Right.
Another commonality between all those great bookers, Dusty, Paul, Bill Watts, Eddie, Roy Scheider, those guys that were able to take this kid that nobody really pays attention to and make him a star. This guy where nobody can figure out make you a star. They were incredible at the character development. And to me, not at the time I got it, but looking back at how they would lay these angles and storylines out, you said, for the next several months, it's laid out and booked out, that they were able to keep, the eye on that prize. I'm curious, it just popped in my head with a side question. So they've got this angle booked down for 4 months.
Right.
Something 9/11 hits, some major thing in the real world out there. Did they just stick to their plan for the 4 months, or did they somehow nudge a bit of that world in?
They would. If something like 9/11 happened, they would go completely away from the world.
Yeah.
Because they wanted people to relax and not
forget about it. Yeah.
But they would stay on their plan, but maybe change it a little, like. Okay, we had the heel dominating and then put the baby face over, but at the end the heel was gonna get his heat back. Maybe we're not gonna put the heat back on the heel because of what's happening in the real world.
Right.
Yeah.
Give people escapism.
Yeah.
Interesting. I've always wondered, like, especially since 9/11, bigger stuff happened. I was a day old when JFK got assassinated, but the wall coming down, things like that. But something that's so earth-shattering as 9/11 and how that shook everything up. I would seem to think that from a booker's point of view, we had this thing planned out 4 months in this direction, but we don't want to beat the fans over the head with this big mouth heel constantly going over. A lot of moving parts there as a booker and a promoter.
Yeah, and I also think it would be something like this. This is just off the top of my head. You're the heel. I'm the baby face. Rather than you get your heat back, is the plan. Then all of a sudden, 9/11, everybody says, sorry, he can't get his heat back. And then Jim Duggan appears. Of course he's going to get his heat back. After he beats Kevin, he's going to keep on, or Kevin and Jim's going to come down with the flag. And
USA.
And then back into the running.
Yeah. And again, not that it's, you're not cured of cancer, right?
Right.
It's not. But it is the things that I see that are so simple. Like Steamboat used to do a million of these things on a nightly basis. Jake, I saw a match one time with Jake Roberts wrestling Bad News Brown, right? And who, of course, had the judo background and everything. Well, he's working the leg, and every few minutes, Jake would start mounting those jabs, get him going a little bit. And just when he starts getting him moving, he'd kick the bad leg, go back to him, and Jake's back down. And this went on for 30, 40 minutes. Finally, Jake starts coming. Again, same thing. He goes to kick the knee. This time he blocks it and starts coming with bigger roundhouses. He goes all the way back to the ropes. He goes to Irish whip him, News reverses it, takes that first step on the left leg, and crumbled, right? And I remember thinking to myself, if the bag wasn't white, oh my God, like that's so simple, yeah, but so brilliant, simple. Yeah, yeah. Brilliant. And today, I think a lot of that would be missed. With the guys that you've worked with over your career, obviously some of the biggest names in the history lore of wrestling, were there, a general question that I always ask everybody here, who were the people that you couldn't buy a good match with?
You know, here's somebody I could buy a good match, and a lot of people had tough matches. You know, Billy Jack, for some reason, he just sold like a champion for me.
Yeah.
Sort of think.
So there's your thing. For me, it was Rick Steiner. I love Rick's work.
I was going to say, you hit it on the head. Rick was so aggressive as a babyface. Mm.
Yeah.
You know, what are you going to do, ball up?
Right.
You
know what I mean? Good luck.
Yeah. I mean,
it wasn't like we didn't get along.
No.
Just two different places.
It was two different matches going on.
Yeah.
He had his own match going on. You had your own match going on.
Yeah.
And I think it was because they went to Japan so much, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Physical side of stuff in there.
Yeah.
Now, the flip side of that, who were the guys you could not see for 10 years, walk in and have a great match?
Barry Windham, to me, he's one of the greatest babyfaces.
Oh, I just had him here last week, and, you know, just huge. As a babyface, and for you, again, for you fans that are unaware, just know Barry as a heel. Go back and watch those early years of him as a babyface, because it's mesmerizing.
Nobody went over the top rope better than Barry.
Yeah. And because of the way that lanky body he had,
his arms,
it just looked legit, right? It looked like that's what it would look like if somebody were getting knocked out of the ring.
When I would wrestle him and I'd throw him over the top, right? I'd thought he'd be distracted, I'd throw him over the top. And this was especially in Atlanta because the fans were right on top of you and he had all the girls in the front row. When he started to crawl back to the apron, I would get him down there and I'd feel hold him in the head. His head was flapping like that, the girls would faint. He was great.
He's one of those guys. I think because of the way he, you know, sort of left the business a little bit early and everything, that he doesn't, when you hear people talk about the greats,
he doesn't get his due.
You rarely hear his name in there, but those of us that either worked with him or worked beside him and watching, he was a special talent.
One of the greatest talents I ever worked with.
Anybody you ever, in your time in the office or in the dressing room, are there any standouts that you think of that, by all rights, should have been the next big thing? You know, they got the size, they got the look, the athleticism, the gift of gab, they got all those things, and no matter what you try, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, Adam Bomb is rough. Yeah. Something went wrong there.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, a big kid like him can move.
Oh, he can move, and I just saw a tape of him recently. When he was wrath, he looked incredible, and his move sets was incredible. Something, and I blame coaching on that. You know, somebody dropped the ball somewhere.
Yeah. Mike Awesome's the guy I usually think of. 6'4", 5", could do anything, but he just quite never got the traction. And I wonder, it's where I'm leading with all this. What in the business a promoter, you're working in the office and you bring me in, try for a couple weeks, and then we're gonna let the kid go, bring somebody else in. What, I mean, other than the obvious things, what are the things that go into that? I mean, you guys expect the money to bring, say, me in, and you're putting all this time television-wise into me, but something's just not clicking. Is it best just to say, fire the kid, get him out of here, or let's get him out the door after we get him to do what we need to do?
I think it's best for everybody to sit down and say, listen, are we doing it wrong? We're open to listen to you, but if this doesn't work, we'd like you to come back after whatever you need to do, own up. So you're not hurt, lets you do a job for somebody early, that means something.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll give you wins on the way out because we don't want you to come back.
Right.
Because some people sometimes stage fright.
There's a lot of that, surprisingly.
When
I was in TNA, Candido was brought in, clean, great shape. They wanted to manage the Naturals. And the very first weekend, He rolls into the ring, do a little heel spot and take a bump and knock back out. Sonny Siaki gave him a leg lariat. And when he landed, just the way he turned to hit his leg, and you see Tibbs hip break right there. It's clear as day. I went running straight to the ringside. Well, right after that, he was off for quite a while, obviously, and then unfortunately passed away in 2005 from blood clot. But the company came to me and said what they had Chris in for was they wanted the Naturals, pushed up to be one of their bigger teams. And I was against it at first because I didn't want it to look like Chris didn't get it done. Now here's his partner. I get it done. Different things. So they finally talked me into it and asked if we were to put the belts on. This is probably spring, by October, November, write the storyline out. So the way I approached it was, I'm not going to come in there and suddenly they become the big stars.
Right.
And make Chris look bad. It's unbelievable. So I came up with this idea that I'm constantly, almost there, slip on a banana peel. Right? And the more they do that, the harder I drive them. Till finally one of them, Chase, knocks me on my ass, blood trickle out of my mouth. And as they turn to walk out, the little sinister grin, like finally the killer instinct I'm looking for. From that point forward in the written, what I had written out, was they were now supposed to start getting put over, pushed more to the top. So I get into the launch pad, they do the rest. Instead, over the next three tapings, we beat them like six times. And somebody at the production meeting said something like, these kids couldn't get over if they fell off a cliff. And I had to raise my hand. I was like, I'm the guy that wrote the story. We didn't follow the story. Mm-hmm. It became a kind of, how many times have you, in your business, in your career, had you seen that done? Some kid, some tag team, whatever, getting right there, they're ready to go, and somebody times, somewhere drops.
How many times? Too many.
Yeah.
You know it. Too many times. There's so much bullshit.
Yeah.
In our business in the back. A guy doesn't like a guy for some reason. Yeah. The guy's making too much money, he's driving into a car, got a nicer bag, whatever.
Right.
It gets to be sometimes, and I'm sure it's that way in team sports, rather than pulling together, and I think that's why some teams play better than others.
Right.
They buy into the product. I mean, there was a time when I was in Florida, everybody bought into that product. When I was in Georgia, everybody bought into that product.
Yeah.
You were in WWF, and not everybody was buying into that product.
Right, yeah.
It's different.
So we're sitting here with the legend, Kevin Sullivan, Devil, Beelzebub, Old Scratch. And we're going to have him back because we're turning the camera on. I had a million questions in my head I wanted to ask, but got sucked all these different directions because everything's so damn fascinating. So we'll have Kevin Sullivan back. Kevin, I appreciate
Thank
being here, brother.
Great to see you, franchise.
Appreciate you guys tuning in to Appalachian Exposé. We'll see you here next time. We're going to have another deal with him and a whole bunch of my friends. Appreciate you being here, bud.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother. Please welcome in our new sponsor, Fishing Clash. Download Fishing Clash for free right now on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of your Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose the gift code section, and input my special code, Taskmaster, to get an awesome reward for a total value of $20. Enjoy a chilling atmosphere after a hard-working day. Get familiar with different types of fish species and their habits. You can choose one or two, or you know what you like the most. Explore amazing fishing spots worldwide from Florida to Kamchatka. Whether you prefer fly fishing, ice fishing, trolling, you'll admire the look of all the fishing spots available in this game. This game will help you remember how you went fishing with your dad when you were a kid. So download Fishing Clash today for free on your mobile phone by typing in Fishing Clash in the search bar of the Google Play or App Store. Open the menu in the top right-hand corner, choose gift code section, and input the special code Taskmaster to get a total value of $20. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the Fishing Clash, as it is a great casual time killer.